Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers. It's brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, hopefully taking place this July 28th through the 31st in Washington, D.C. That's if they don't put us all in cages and kill a fair number of us. But anyway, we're hoping we'll be there. We've got a lot going on, just all over the place, and about this coronavirus thing, don't get your panties in a wad. This is all to cover up these failing banks and the crashing Wall Street markets. They've been doing this for months, shoring them up with $60 billion a day. You can't just run corrupt for so long, and eventually all your schemes and plans will come back and bite you in the butt. But they don't want to be held responsible for this, so the economy collapsing behind this virus is going to be used as the excuse. There is so much misinformation out there about this virus, who has it, who doesn't. They don't even have a test that accurately determines if you have the virus. You've all had colds. Get over it. The people that they claim have passed away also had other problems, other health issues. The people who were average and healthy get over it in about 7 days like you do any cold. Sometimes they last a little longer. But like I say, we've all been there and done that. And for all of you out there running out and buying toilet paper, I don't even know what to say to you. If you don't have anything to eat, toilet paper is not going to be an issue. Get a grip on yourself. Anyway, moving on, our guest this evening he's quite a special guest, and his name is Russell Gault, and he had to flee the U.S. to get away from threats, retaliation, harassment. Tonight, what he's going to be talking about is the VA police corruption, and he was forced to leave the country fearing for his life after blowing the whistle on VA police corruption and a corrupt VA director in Long Beach, California. And the VA police twice threatened to charge him with a crime and sent him death threats, and they did to his girlfriend as well. He says the amazing part is that no one in the VA, the FBI, Congress, or the Department of Justice cares. He recently made a video exposing the corruption and posted it on YouTube, and I'll be posting that link after the show. You can go to the PPJ Gazette to see it. I wanted to include it in the promo tonight. It wouldn't load, but we'll get it up on the PPJ so you can view it. And with that, please help me welcome our guest, Russell Gault. Russell, how you doing?
I'm good, Marty. How are you?
Oh, old and cold. Old and cold. But Russell, this is such a story, I can't even believe it. And we've decided to split this up. We'll be doing at least one more interview with you, if not more. And we're going to focus tonight on the police, VA police corruption. So I'm going to let you start that off and tell people what they need to know about this. Or maybe why don't you start telling them who you are and your service, your military service?
Sure. I earned a Bachelor of Science degree in physics from the University of South Florida back in 1983, and I was an officer in the Navy. After I graduated from college, I spent 5 years in the Navy. I spent 2 years in Navy schools, Officer Candidate School, and then Naval Nuclear Power School, which is a six-month classroom school, and then 6 months at a prototype, qualifying to supervise the operation of a nuclear reactor, and then Submarine Officer School, and then I spent 3 years on a fast-attack submarine out of Charleston, South Carolina. And after that, I went to work for the Department of Energy, and I started out training naval officers to operate or to supervise the operation of nuclear power plants, which is what I did in the Navy most of the time.
Oh, my gosh. That's I can't even imagine what that job encompassed. When did you leave the military, Russell?
In 1988.
Okay. I take it you had some interaction with the VA facility, service-related, which put you there. And what did you see?
Well, yeah, not back in 88. I just started going to the VA about 12 years ago. 2008 is when I started getting my health care from the VA.
Okay.
When I worked for the Department of Energy, I had private health insurance, and then I worked for a hospital and had health insurance through them.
Okay.
And then I became disabled 12 years ago, and I've been getting health care from the VA since then.
Okay. All right. Well, with all that behind you, I can see why you'd be a suspicious character. I'm sorry, but you can't have that kind of credentials and tell me that you don't have something important to say. So what happened here? What happened?
Well, back in January of 2017 is when it all started. I was at the emergency room at the VA hospital in Long Beach, California, and I was harassed by three VA police officers.
Why?
Well, I was in there for about 5 hours, and I had what's called a thombroid hemorrhoid. I didn't know what it was. I had rectal bleeding and a lot of pain. I couldn't sit down, and I'd been walking around for 5 hours, and I was getting kind of tired. So I went over and asked the nurse how much longer it might be, and she said about an hour. And I kept going back to her about every hour, asking her how much longer it might be, and she kept saying about an hour. So finally I said to her, "You have failed." And I said it very sternly, and they called the police on me for telling her that she failed.
Oh.
And I think because I was pacing around, you know, I wasn't sitting down, I was walking around, I looked mad, mm-hmm. and I was. They just called the police to come de-escalate me, and of course they did the opposite.
Yeah. This thing of keeping people waiting, emergency rooms to me are a blight on humanity. They're absolutely, in almost any situation or environment, worthless. And the lack of attention, this thing of waiting hours and hours and hours, you'd be better off just waiting till the next day and going to your doctor if you can get in. What happened from there, Russell?
Yeah, as far as the emergency rooms, I agree. I mean, it's standard. People just expect to wait 8 hours now in an emergency room, and, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
But, you know, that's what people are saying in there. You know, hey, we've been waiting for 8 hours. We've been waiting for 10 hours. You know, it's ridiculous to me that that's just the standard now.
Yes. Yeah.
So when the police showed up, there were three of them, and the senior officer called me outside with a finger wag. So this is all outside in front of the emergency room. And as soon as I went out there, the very first words out of his mouth were a lie. And he said to me, "I talked to the staff, and the reason you haven't been called is because they don't know you're a veteran." And
what?
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, "That's ridiculous." And then he repeated it. So he told me that they didn't know I was a veteran, and that's why I wasn't called. So I went inside and I said to the nurse, "You know, how can you not know I'm a veteran?" And she said, "Of course we know you're a veteran, Mr. Gault." So the officer lied to me. I realized, hey, this guy lied to me.
Yeah.
I went back outside and asked him why he lied, and he started laughing.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Jiminy Christmas.
Yeah, that's he was there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, Russell.
Okay, yeah. He the whole time he was just trying to pick a fight.
Yeah.
So I told him after, you know, he started laughing at me, I started to get more agitated, which is exactly what he wanted.
Yeah.
And I said to him, "I was an officer on a nuclear submarine, and you are a liar." And after I said that, he stepped up into my personal space, you know, right up like a foot away from me. He stuck out his chin, and he said, "You want to hit me?"
What?
So that's challenging me to a fight, the way he said it, stepping into my personal space to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was doing this, the other two officers were just standing there laughing. Okay, so they were there to harass me. That's what their intention was from the start. Because the very first words out of his mouth, you know, were escalating words.
Yes.
So,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. So I walked away and went inside to get a pen and paper to come back out and get his name. And when I came back outside, he wasn't wearing a nameplate.
Oh.
I looked at the other two officers, and they weren't wearing nameplates either.
Imagine that.
Yeah. All three of them took off their nameplates. Because I told them when I left, I said, "You know, I'm going to file a complaint. I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to file a complaint." And went inside to get the pen and paper.
Wow.
Yeah. And they wouldn't tell me their names. Matter of fact, that guy, every time I asked him his name, he said, "I already told you."
That seems to be a standard response, even with police on the street, that'll do the same thing. They'll remove that in their badges. They'll flash their badge at you, but then hide it in their pocket so you can't even get their badge number. And then if you ask them what's their name, they'll respond to you, "I already told you," when, of course, they did not. And, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that was standard training. I just thought it was the VA standard training.
No.
Yeah, all three of them took off their nameplates, and this one guy, you know, the conversation was basically, you know, "What's your name? I already told you." "You know, no, you didn't. Tell me again. I already told you. I'm going to file a complaint. Tell me your name. I already told you. Why would you not tell me your name? I already told you." And about 10 times it was, "I already told you." And every time he says that, I'm getting more and more angry.
Right.
Which is, again, exactly what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to leave. But before I left, I took their pictures. And I got a picture on the video.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
And they'll probably say they never saw them before. They don't know who they were. They don't know what you're talking about. I swear. Okay. So what happened then?
Well, I filed a complaint with a patient advocate. Her name is Michon Dean. I still don't know the officer's name, which I don't really care, but I call him Nameless. I have no idea what his name is. So I filed a complaint with a patient advocate, and she ignored it. I didn't hear from her for a couple of days, sent her another email, didn't hear from her, sent her another email, didn't hear from her. So then I sent her an email asking if I could meet with her. And the only email that she responded to out of all the emails I sent her was this one email, and she said, "We don't make appointments with veterans. We're a walk-in service. Stop by any time." And, of course, every time I went there, she's not there. And every time I called her, you know, she never answered the phone. So she's a ghost. You know, patient advocates are just absolutely fraudulent. They work for the VA, so obviously, you know, their job is to protect VA employees. It's not to advocate for veterans.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard that from many, many of the veterans, that these people are absolutely non-existent except for a nameplate and a phone number, which no one answers and no one responds to. I've heard this many, many times. It makes you wonder, why are we paying these people? They're hired to do a specific job, and yet for some reason they're not doing it. Now, somebody, Russell, knows they're not doing this. Somebody told them, avoid this, if you know what I'm saying. Somebody gave them orders saying, don't respond, don't answer the phone.
Right, that's their training. They're trained by the supervisor of the officers. In the office in Long Beach, there's four or five patient advocates, and they work for the patient services manager, I think it is. And you know, they're trained that way, just like the cops are trained to, you know, harass people instead of de-escalate them.
Right.
Patient advocates are trained to ignore people. That's the first thing they do. If you keep going back to them and bothering them, you know, then they start interacting with you, but they're still trying to get rid of you. That's their goal, is just to make you go away.
Yes. Wow. This is just, you know, you keep hearing these things over and over again, and you know, we've been out here quite some time talking about these things, and I know that many people in D.C. listen into these shows, and so they're well aware of this, and yet nobody even bothers to deny it. You know what I'm saying? Nobody even says, your guest was incorrect, and this doesn't happen. We looked at it, you know, nothing, absolutely nothing. But like I say, we know that they're listening. And they know that this goes on. And see, this has all been reported to Congress. It's all been reported to individual senators and representatives. And they do nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, they don't have to answer to anybody. You know,
no.
I call them tyrants, which they truly are. They have absolute power, and nobody holds them accountable.
Yep.
And they don't have to answer to anybody. They just ignore everybody, just like the patient advocate ignores veterans.
Well, you know, one of the things I've said about this, especially the VA program, here we're throwing billions of dollars at it every year. And this agency runs at such a low level of functionality. I mean, it is dysfunctional to the 10th power. It is costing the American public a massive amount of money to allow this agency to continue on the way it is. And Russell, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me a tremendous amount of money could be saved if we treated the veterans in a timely manner and fairly and adequately, than if we continued on this course of trying to screw everybody, avoid taking care of them, and just like this patient advocate, hiring people whose job is to do nothing but ignore you. What is the point in that? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand either. I don't know how they became so corrupt. It's been decades in the making.
Yes.
Yeah. you know, I think they're unfixable. I think they have to be abolished, but of course that's not going to happen either. But I don't see any way to fix them other than, and we can talk about it later, if you get the right VA secretary in there, he can actually make a difference. But we've had nothing but corrupt dirtbags in there for years.
Yeah. And that seems to be a chronic problem in every federal agency, but this one in particular. It just, like I say, the massive amount of money wasted. I know a few years back I had a man on the show, and he talked about the Arizona VA, one of the VAs there. And here in their budget, and I found that in most of the budgets for the VA centers, the hospitals and so on, $1 million or $2 million in the budget for redecorating. And I thought at the time, how many veterans could that help? You know, you need new office furniture. Why? You don't like what's in there? That's not a good enough reason. But just idiotic thing, millions of dollars earmarked for artwork.
Yes. The absurd part is when you walk through a VA hospital, you see huge paintings and of the directors and the former, you know, big shots, you know, lining the walls. And how much do they pay for that just to, you know, advertise themselves in the hospital?
Yeah, exactly. I think the most ridiculous thing I heard, Russell, was in the Center for Blinded Veterans. And here they spent $800,000 on a giant rock for ambience. And I thought, these guys can't see. What are you talking about? And it was nothing but a massive rock.
You know where the money went. It went to some buddy of somebody. You know, $400,000 of it went to him, and the rest of it went into some VA employee's pocket. You know, I mean, spending $800,000 on something you don't need, a lot of it probably went to, you know, somebody's pocket personally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they needed rocks, my goodness, I got a ton of them out here in my yard. I'd let them head for nothing. And,
no, for nothing, $50,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely, it passes the point of ridiculousness and actually gets into an area that it's like, not just what were you thinking, but are you thinking at all? And Congress passes this stuff. That's what bothers me. They know it's in the bill. Well, a lot of them do. Most of them don't bother to read the bills. They're told how to vote, and that's the way they vote. But it just, like I say, billions of dollars thrown at this agency. And one of the things I think is at work here, Russell, and you feel free to disagree or agree, whatever, but I think a lot of this is they keep talking about privatization. And I keep seeing the word stakeholders pop up, which is always a red flag. Somebody's about to get screwed. And what stakeholders is private businesses, corporations who have a vested interest in profiting if they can get a hold of that program. And the public will still be forced to finance it, so it's like free money for them. And if the veterans think the service now is poor, you wait till it gets privatized and they don't have to answer any questions because they'll claim proprietary rights about how they operate, what they spend, anything else, proprietary rights and trade secrets. And under that, they don't have to divulge anything. And then we'll have Congress standing up again like we did here 3 years ago, where that representative stood up, and in response to a question of why didn't they order the FDA to do specific tests on vaccines, he said, well, we can advise them, but we can't make them do anything. And the reason is that's a private corporation, and it's contracted to the federal corporation as a governmental services agency, just like the VA is. The VA already has several private investors. And they just milk that system left and right. And, you know, I want to remind people, these are the people that put on a uniform and went to war. These are the people that stood up when they said, we've got to go do something about this, that, or something else. And basically what we did is we went and blew up a country whose assets we wanted. And we killed a large number of people and blew up their communities and killed their families and everything else. But they went, called to duty. They went. And for them to come home and be treated this way. Russell, one of the other things that I've been approached with is, why do veterans think they should have free lifetime medical care? Because that was part of the contract. That was a contract they signed. And in return for their service and lousy pay, they were offered free lifetime medical care. It was part of the contract. Why don't you want to make good on your contract? You know, if you signed up and got free medical care but didn't bother to go to war when they told you to, how long do you think that'd stand? How long do you think you'd get free medical care? You know, and I always get that from people who never put on a uniform. Always. It's always people who've never served, have no idea what that's like or about. And I don't know. I hear all kinds of things. It's amazing the attitudes people will adopt to justify why they don't want to help somebody else.
You know? Yeah, I've always thought that most citizens are really second-class citizens. If you don't work for the American government, then you're a second-class citizen. The
yes.
people who work for the government are first-class citizens. And mm-hmm. I found out that veterans are third-class citizens.
Yes.
You know, we have to get our health care from the VA, you know, those of us who do. Second-class citizens don't have rights. But third-class citizens, they come out and violate our rights intentionally. They come after us. It's not like
yes.
we just wander into this. They come after us to violate our rights.
Yes, I agree with that. I do. You, in this encounter with these officers at that emergency room, did anything ever come of that?
Well, yeah, let me continue a little bit, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I filed the complaint with the patient advocate, and, you know, she ignored it, and then she wouldn't meet with me, and she never answered her phone. And finally, I went in to stop by her office. I had an appointment with optometry, so I stopped by her office. Of course, she wasn't there. So I decided, this is about 5 or 6 days after I filed the complaint, to go to the VA police station myself and to find out what's going on. So I went to the police station. Long story short, nobody there would talk to me. They wouldn't accept a complaint. You know, basically, I just had to leave because, you know, they weren't going to do anything. It was obvious they weren't going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm walking out, I'm walking across the street going to my optometry appointment. And who do I see sitting in a truck at a stop sign? You know, nameless, right? The guy that harassed me, that challenged me to a fight. So I'm walking across the street and I look over there and see him. And he accelerates from the stop sign, turns in my direction, and drives his vehicle directly at me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So what he ended up doing was, at the last second, he swerved to miss me by about 3 feet. And he was laughing and waving as he drove by. So he arrested me a second time, and I filed a complaint about that, too, and, of course, that complaint was also ignored.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, how did this get into the threats and everything else that went on?
Okay, yeah, coming up. After about 2 weeks of being ignored, I sent an email to the patient advocate that said, you will answer to Congress. 1 hour later, right, I mean, they ignore me for 2 weeks. 1 hour after I tell her that she's going to answer to Congress, I get an email from VA Police Detective Larry Kidd, threatening to charge me with a crime.
Oh, and your crime was?
Harassing the patient advocate.
Oh my.
Yeah, telling the patient advocate that, you know, she's going to answer to Congress is harassment.
Yeah.
Didn't know
okay.
that. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So what I did was I sent the complaints to him, and I spoke to him on the phone. I called him up and asked him, you know, what's going on with this, you know, threatening to charge me with a crime stuff. And he said he didn't like the tone of my emails.
Oh, gosh.
I said, is that a crime?
Yeah.
He wasn't ready for the call.
Yeah, wow. I see. Okay. And
yes.
So he didn't like your tone. Then what happened?
So I sent complaints to him, and he ignored them, just like patient advocate.
Uh-huh.
And about a week later, I talked to a deputy chief of police, Anthony Brown, on the phone. And he pretended like he didn't know anything about my complaints.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I ended up hanging up on him because he lied to me. And
they all do. They all do, and they do it. They don't even bat an eye.
Exactly.
Just, you know, they just do it.
I interacted with 5 police, and all 5 of them either lied to me or lied about me or both.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's just disgusting.
So I talked with him a week later, a week after that. So he pretended like he didn't know anything about my complaint. A week later, I call him again. And again, he pretends like he knows nothing about my complaint. And he's laughing. You know, just like the cop was laughing, he's laughing too.
Yeah.
So that's when I went ahead and I did what I said I was going to do. You know, I requested a congressional inquiry.
Wow.
So,
and
yeah.
What came of that, Russ?
Well, it took 13 months. They're supposed to respond within 30 days. That's the standard. It took the director, his name is Walt Dannenberg, 13 months to respond to Congress. And he responded with a letter full of lies. And he lied to Congress, which is a crime. He told Congress that I threatened the patient advocate twice and that I threatened people in HR. So, and he said, that's why Kidd threatened to charge me with a crime, because I threatened employees. And kid's email threatening to charge me with a crime says it's based on the emails that he has in his possession. So kid threatens to charge me with a crime based on emails. The director tells Congress he threatened to charge me with a crime because I threatened employees.
Jeez. So they just change their story as they go, huh?
Yeah, whatever lie they have to tell is what they do.
Well, so how did Congress react to this?
Well, I told him that he lied, and it was Senator, or I'm not sorry, it was Representative Alan Lowenthal, and they don't actually have any power at all. They have they can't do investigations. They do inquiries, and all they do is they get a letter back, and whatever that letter says, you know, they just file it away. So they don't actually do anything. They get lied to probably all the time. Yeah. I told them, hey, this is a letter full of lies, and they said, hey, that's all we can do. That's our job.
Yeah. I have found in everything I'm into, Russ, that Congress, especially federally, the lawmakers are just absolutely worthless as tits on a boar. They can't do anything. They don't know anything. Nobody told them anything. Why, they never heard of it before. And I mean, they all say the same things. And you're absolutely right. They're powerless. And all they're doing, they're getting paid by lobbyists and special interests to pass this or stop that. And that's basically all they do. And they don't write their own bills. They don't do any of that. I don't know why we're paying those people either. I think we need a moratorium on government. But go ahead.
You probably know that I think the numbers are 90% of Americans disapprove of Congress, yet 90% of the Congress gets reelected every 2 years.
Well, I think that's questionable. I truly do. We are one of only three countries that uses electronic voting. And if you remember back during Bush and Dole, I was one of those people that went in the voting booth and hit, Gore. I hit for Gore and watched my vote flip over to Bush. We have the only voting system in the world whose programming cannot be examined. Now, every gambling machine in Las Vegas has to allow the government to come in and examine their programming to make sure that they aren't rigging the machines. But for some reason, we can't check Diebold and Sequoia's voting machines. And if they say recount, the only thing that machine will reproduce is what it produced the first time. And so I don't know who's actually getting voted in and who isn't. I can't believe people like Mitch McConnell keep getting voted in because everybody in Kentucky hates that man, and yet they claim he keeps getting reelected. Nancy Pelosi, she is despised far and wide, and yet somehow she always gets reelected by a landslide. There's many of those, and I really question that. I don't think we can get rid of him. I think that whole voting system is rigged. We had a guy on the show, Russ, here about 3 years ago named David Frank, and he had the solution, I believe, to the voting dilemma, and that is call from your number, only one vote per phone number, and vote that way. And that would eliminate all the votes from dead voters where they bundle people who have died, all their information, and sell it to bundlers who sell it to political parties, and then they have people sit around and fill out the ballots as if these people are still alive. And they do the same thing with people in nursing homes. That's why when you look through all this guardianship crap, they'll take everything away from every right they've got except the right to vote.
I've learned so much about guardianship, listening to your shows and listening to Maggie Rose. And I was completely in the dark about that. I had no idea that, you know, seniors were so vulnerable, and they took advantage of them every chance they could.
Yeah, well, there's that, if you can get Netflix, the Dirty Money series came out again. And episode number 5 is called Guardianship Inc. And it's about how they kidnap, plunder the estates of elderly people, and then basically either shove them in a nursing home or leave them on the street. Yeah. They do this all day, every day. And I think they're doing the same with our veterans. Russ, you remember here 2 years ago, the fight over water rights in North Dakota, the Standing Rock Sioux? And it was here, it was winter, it was severely cold, and they were trying to stop them from running that XL pipeline, and they called out for veterans to come and defend them. And I remember seeing mainstream media at the time, I still had cable then, talking about, well, they're not going to show up and everything. But I told some people connected to the protest, I said, they're watching this to see what happens. And I said, they're putting this out on the media. They're not going to show up. They're not going to do this. I said, they're trying to condition veterans out there not to show up. What happened was a huge number of veterans showed up. And that set the alarms off in D.C. And that's why there has been so much since then about taking away their Second Amendment rights, because they're afraid our veterans will organize should they pull something off like they're doing now and try to defend the rest of us. And I watched this stuff. I think it was a shock to everybody. And I remember those guys standing there, and they were wearing the insignia for the branch of service they were in. And they, you know, were unarmed, but they were holding up signs, before you get to them, you're going to have to come through us. And at that point, there were police departments from Wisconsin, as far away from Wisconsin, Minnesota, over there backing up the local police department. I mean, they were doing terrible things to these people, shooting them with fire hoses, water in that sub-zero temperature, stripping them down naked, putting them in cages, leaving them outside to the elements. I mean, they did all kinds of rotten crap to those people. And when those vets showed up, all those out-of-state police departments packed all their goodies and went home. And so they backed down. And, you know, they're still warring over that, but it's not quite what it was. But this was the one thing they were afraid of. And I know our government lives in fear of. We trained our military to kill indiscriminately. We trained them to be aggressors, to not have any inhibitions about what they were doing. A lot of vets come home, and what they were forced to do has damaged them terribly, because what they are forced to do is not in their nature. It's not in human nature. But they do what they're ordered to do. And the fear that these guys are going to organize, I think that's one reason medical care for them is so non-existent. And when they do get them, they drug them to the point that many of them die in their sleep. They say, oh, they committed suicide. No, they didn't. You drugged them to death. And some of them do, yes, of course. Some of them do. And but many of them were just simply drugged to death by the VA. And yet, that's another thing in this, Russ. The amount of medication the VA hands out to veterans in these mega doses scares me to death just reading it. You can't tell me there is an ill intent towards these guys.
Go ahead. Yeah, I agree. Two things to point out, I guess, as far as suicide goes. I'm sure you know that the suicide rate for veterans is 1.5 times that of the general population. You know, 22 veterans a day, is 8,000 veterans a year commit suicide. Yeah. 1.5 times. I mean, that's statistically very significant. But here's the part that's the kicker. Veterans who receive health care from the VA are more likely to commit suicide than veterans who don't. So just fact that you go to the VA for health care increases your risk of suicide. And that's from the VA's 2019 annual Veteran Suicide Prevention Report. So the VA itself admits that going to the VA for health care increases your risk of suicide.
Oh, my God. I have someone here asking if you know anything about what's called the bonus strike with the World War I vets.
No, I haven't heard that.
Okay. I don't know anything about that either. I'm going to have to look that up. How did this situation with the VA police, how did this end up? I mean, did it just disappear into cyberspace?
Oh, no, it's just getting started. After the director wrote a letter full of lies to Congress telling them that, you know, they threatened to charge me with a crime because, you know, I'm out there threatening his employees. Now, I wasn't going to stand for that. Basically, I was harassed. Detective Kidd covered up the harassment, and now the director has covered up the cover-up. So I started sending emails. I sent an email to Kidd, and the questions I was asking was just basically, did the patient advocate ever claim that I threatened her? He ignored me. I sent an email to the patient advocate. Did you ever claim that I threatened you? Of course, she ignored me. But Kidd didn't. After I sent an email to the patient advocate, I'm asking her if she'd ever claim that I threatened her, Kidd sent me a death threat.
Oh.
Yeah. They're veiled. You know, it's not like I'm going to kill you if you don't shut up.
Uh-huh.
His email was, I just moved to Nevada 10 days prior to getting this email.
Okay.
And what he did was he accessed my medical record illegally, which is common.
Yes.
And found some information in there that I moved to Nevada, and he used that information to intimidate me. And here's what his email said. I remember it verbatim. It was, Russell, hey, I was just reading an article about the 15 states with the highest people on food stamps, and I cannot believe it. My home state of Nevada is on that list. I guess it has changed since the Duke passed away. Nevada, I just can't believe it's on the list. So the way that breaks down is, I know where you live. I have friends where you live, in my home state of Nevada. John Wayne is dead, and I'm on the list.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So he wanted me to know that he knows where I live, you know, and that he knows people there.
Mm-hmm.
And he reminded me that John Wayne was dead. Not sure why, but, you know, well, I know why. But,
yeah,
you know, he just
thought
I'd be interested in the food stamp situation, I guess, in his home state.
I see. Well.
Yeah. So a week later, I hadn't had any contact with anybody from the VA. I didn't email anybody. You know, I actually started writing a letter to the VA secretary at this point. And a week later, I get another email from Kid just out of the blue. And he again, the second time now, threatens to charge me with a crime.
Wow.
Yeah, in this email, he directed me to stop texting the patient advocate and calling her at home. And I've never done either one of those. So the way I look at it, he set me up to charge me with a crime. I know the guy's a liar.
Yeah.
He's directed me to stop doing things I've never done. I just figure his buddies, you know, he's got friends out there in Nevada. His buddies are going to come arrest me anytime now and beat the shit out of me.
Yeah. Where do they find these people, Russ? That's what I want to know. Where do they find these people that will go along with this stuff? And many of them, you can see outwardly, they enjoy what they are doing.
Yeah. Well, here's my thought on that. Just the same way as integrity starts at the top, you know, they say accountability starts at the top. You know, integrity starts at the top and accountability starts with integrity. So it filters down from the top. You know, if you got integrity, you hold your people accountable, they hold their people accountable. Well, it's the exact opposite when you have corruption at the top, which is what they have.
Uh-huh.
So the way it works with the directors is they don't want, you know, honest people working for them. That's why, you know, they get rid of whistleblowers.
Right.
And what they do is, you know, if a whistleblower, you know, if there's somebody that won't, you know, lie for them or falsify a record or, you know, do whatever it is that the director wants them to do, then the director tells the people who are loyal liars, you know, to lie, to build a case, to fire that person. So what they end up doing is that person either gets fired or that person, you know, just resigns out of, you know, frustration. All you're left with are liars. All you're left with are the bad people, and that's who we're talking about.
Well, you know what bothers me in all of this, no matter which agency we're dealing with, that the costs of all of this are being paid by taxpayers. That the cost of them harassing you, threatening you, the intimidation, retaliation, we're paying for all of that.
A great deal of money goes to pay VA employees to not just harass us, but to cover up. I had 17 people on Facebook gaslighting me after I posted a video on Facebook. 17 different names. They're paying people just to monitor Facebook all day and to make positive comments about the VA and to slam veterans who say bad things about the VA. So
what
they spend a lot of money on that.
What you do is go up in the corner, the right-hand corner of that comment, and you'll see three real faint gray spots. You click on that, and it will bring down a drop-down menu that will allow you to delete that comment. But before you do that, collect the name that's on that comment, and after you take the comment down, go into your settings and blacklist that person so they can't comment again.
Yeah, what I did was I took screenshots of what they said when they're gaslighting me and documented their names in a spreadsheet. And that's why I know there's 17 of them. So I've got the names, but they're not their real names. They're just their Facebook names.
Yeah.
But I have the Facebook names of 17 different people who, you know, gaslighted me.
Yeah.
We've called me a liar. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of people that basically what I focus on is guardianship abuse. And that's whatever got me on the radio. You get these trolls, and some of them are paid. Many of them are not. They just do it because they're nasty people. They take pleasure in it. And they'll, you know, come onto your page and do all kinds of crap. But it just, what we do is where we can identify who that person actually is, we turn it into Facebook. Because we got one troll that's using 6 different aliases, and we've nailed him every time. He's dumb, Russ. He creates a fake profile and then uses his own picture. Gee, I wonder who this is.
Yo, yeah, it's Larry Kidd, the detective that, you know, threatened to charge me the crime, you know, twice and sent me a death threat. I'm about to talk about the death threat he sent to my girlfriend.
Oh,
but
okay.
This guy is an absolute moron. If you read his emails, he writes at the third grade level.
Oh, wow.
But he's been corrupt for a long time, so even though he's a moron, he's good at being corrupt.
Wow. And you said they threatened your girlfriend also.
Yeah, here's what happened. After a kid threatened to charge me the crime for, you know, things I didn't do, obviously, I don't even have the ability to get the patient advocate's home phone number. I can't text her on her cell phone. I don't have the ability. I'm not a cop. I can't get that information. But he can get that information about my girlfriend. All they have to do is claim that they're investigating me for a crime, and they have access to all kinds of information. And that's what they did.
Oh, wow.
So I wrote a letter to the VA secretary. The VA secretary ignored it. And after he didn't ignore it. He ignored me. He sent the letter back to the people I'd reported to him and committed crimes. So he sent the letter back to the VA director, Dannenberg.
Okay.
And I know that because they both, Dannenberg and Kidd, both retaliated against me after I wrote that letter.
Oh, wow.
And, the way they did it, first I got to... Well, I didn't get it. My girlfriend got a text. Now, once again, they're veiled death threats. It's not like, hey, Russell, we're going to murder you if you don't shut up. So my girlfriend got a text. And once again, I know this verbatim because, you know, I've thought about it a lot. And the text was, it was addressed to me. It went to my girlfriend. And it was, Russell, we didn't know how to thank you. So we've decided to send a little something your way. We hope you enjoy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So that's a death threat.
Yes.
You know, we don't have to thank you for the letter that I wrote to the VA secretary. He's going to send a little something my way.
Uh-huh.
And it went to my group.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the director retaliated by sending me a letter threatening to charge me with a crime. So now Kidd has threatened to charge me with a crime twice. Now the director also threatens to charge me with a crime.
Wow.
And through a retaliation for writing a letter to the VA secretary trying to get him to do something.
Who was the secretary you wrote to on this one?
Actually, it was an interim secretary. What was his name? He wasn't there very long.
Okay.
O'Rourke, is that right?
Yeah, I think that is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so after I got the death threat from Kidd and the threat to charge me of the crime from Dannenberg, I wrote another letter to the VA secretary, and this one went to Wilkie. He was in the job at this time.
Okay.
And he ignored it. Never got a response from him either. Then I wrote a letter to the Department of Justice. You know, at the time, the Attorney General was,
There's been so many.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Basically, they ignored it, and no matter who was the Attorney General, the Department of Justice would have ignored it, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
So two letters to the VA secretary, they were both ignored. Wrote a letter to the Department of Justice, and it was ignored. I've had two death threats sent to me. They've threatened to charge me the crime three times. So I'm not going to crawl under a rock. And I can't stay in America and keep fighting these people because, you know, they'll come out and beat me up. They'll stab me to death in a parking lot, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. This is just – this angers me because, like I say, as a taxpayer, we are all paying for this behavior. We're all paying for all of this mismanagement and dysfunction. And I can't get over, Russ, the idea that when these people are confronted, it's like all they can do to keep from laughing. It's like, so what? What are you going to do?
Exactly. You know? That's their attitude. They're tyrants. Yeah. Nobody will hold them accountable. Like I said, the Department of Justice, early on, I sent something to the FBI also, right after the initial harassment and then when Kidd threatened to charge me the crime. I went to Congress, and I also sent a complaint into the FBI. Never heard from them. So Congress is impotent. The FBI ignores me. Department of Justice ignores me. The VA secretary ignores me. They don't care.
Wow. Wow. I don't even know what to say here. You know, you're not the first veteran we've had on complaining about these things, and D.C. is well aware of it. The DOJ, well aware of it. And the Veterans Administration is well aware of it. And yet it just rolls on like nobody said anything. And And you know, there too, like the veterans who have committed suicide in the parking lot of a VA, somebody needs to get a heads up here. When something like this happens, it's one thing if somebody does this, but to do it in the parking lot of the VA is a statement.
Yes.
You know, it is a statement about what's happening there. Do you see this going anywhere at all?
As far as?
Yeah, and them doing anything, from what it sounds like, they're not. Okay, what was the pivotal point? What made you leave the country?
Well, after I, you know, tried every avenue that I thought of, you know, once the Department of Justice ignored me, I knew that if I continued, that if something happened to me, it wouldn't even be investigated. I mean, a drive-by shooting, they wouldn't even investigate it. Right?
Yep.
That was my opinion, and I couldn't stop. I'm not just going to crawl under a rock. I'm not going to let the tyrants make me a slave. You know, I'm not going to give up. I want to make sure these people are held accountable any way I can. So I felt like I had to leave America if I wanted to continue to, you know, try and expose these people, try and get them held accountable, try to do whatever I can do to, you know, fight for my rights.
Russ, did you ever get treatment at the VA?
At the emergency room, I went the next day and got taken care of. You know, I went home. You know, I had to leave because, you know, this guy was just doing everything he could to get me to do something that would give him the justification to beat me up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to leave, but I went back the next day and got taken care of. And let me say that the medical care at this hospital was actually fantastic. It was the best medical care I've ever had. But
wow.
On the administrative side, that's where all the corruption is. So
yeah.
If you're involved with the administrative side, you know, good luck to you.
Wow. This is just bizarre. It's just bizarre. And how long did you have to wait that second day when you went back?
It was about 5 or 6 hours.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Now, if you got people waiting that long, doesn't that indicate to you you don't have enough personnel?
Well, that's what they want to tell you because they want more money. They want to hire more people. The VA is always saying, you know, we're understaffed. And what they really are is underworked. And I can talk about that next show because at the VA hospital in Gainesville, you know, the other story that I have, there's actually an employee there who has refused to work for years. Everybody on her floor knows it. And she's a clerk, and all the nurses know it because two nurses told me about it. And I used to audit nuclear power plants, so I audited her. I monitored her. And I watched her for 12 hours every half hour, and I documented what she was doing. And every single time, and these were 23 observations, every single time she's either playing solitaire or surfing the web on her computer. So,
oh.
And she has to work for years.
You're kidding.
Not kidding. Her name is Linda. I don't know her last name. But, yeah, she hasn't worked for years. Everybody knows it. And I'll just finish the story real quick. I wrote the data down and gave it to the nurse manager. Her name is Elizabeth Weilicher. And the next day, you know, her corrective action was to tell Linda, you know, that an outsider knew that she wasn't working. The next day, Linda's computer screen was adjusted so it couldn't be seen from outside the nursing station. That was
oh.
The corrective action.
Oh, but she didn't have to work.
Well, she doesn't have to work at all.
Yeah, I need that job. And I'm sure it pays well.
Oh, gosh, yeah. The VA pays like 10-15% more than the same position in the civilian world.
Oh, wow. Wow. When you were at that emergency room the night before, how many vets were in there trying to get care?
Oh, gosh. It was almost standing room only, even though, you know, I was staying in the whole time. There were probably 40 people in there, and, you know, the same people, you know, they probably a new person or two every hour, you know, maybe
wow.
A few more than that. But, you know, the same people were in there the whole time I was in there. There's like they'd only treat about 3 people an hour, and there's 40
oh.
People in there.
Jiminy Christmas. That is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
And I think it's like that everywhere. I know up north of me is the St. Cloud VA. And from what I hear, the care there is pretty good overall. And but I've noticed that some of these VAs seem to run pretty good, but the majority of them are just a disaster from one end to the other. And like I say, that this doesn't change, that there's no serious effort to revamp this, get this organization, you know, this specific hospital under control. See, I think this is intentional. I think it's intentional to drive this agency into the ground. These people are willing participants, and so that they can privatize it. And we as the public will keep financing, just like we fund the FDA and the USDA and the CDC, and we're forced to fund these people who actually are working against us. And personally, I think if you go to privatization, you pay your own fees. You pay your own costs. I shouldn't have to give you anything because you're going to profit off of this. We don't profit from it. As the public, we fund it, but we don't get any profit off of it. And the worst part of that is many of our vets aren't taken care of, and or at least not adequately taken care of. When you saw the doctor that second day, did you tell them what had happened the night before?
Yes.
And what'd they say?
Well, they can't do anything about it. You know, they just, you know, they want to just do the minimum and move on. And
yeah.
By the way, when I did see the doctor the next day, it was a Wednesday, I believe. He made an appointment for me on a Friday, you know, to go to get some tests done. And when I went there, they didn't have the appointment in their books. So I had to reschedule the appointment. So the second day I went there, they scheduled an appointment with me on Friday to go see a specialist. And when I got there, they didn't have an appointment for me, and I had to reschedule it.
Oh, good God.
That's typical.
Jiminy Christmas.
Once again, they're just hoping you go away.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, there was a lady we had on that wrote a book, and it was about the VA and the vets being put on what's called a hamster wheel, where they move stuff from desk to desk to desk, and every time it moves to a new desk, then the whole process starts all over again. And her byline on the book was "Stall, Deny, and Hope You Die." And but it was about the treatment her husband, I believe, if I remember correctly, had gotten at the VA. And I've heard this from, I say, many veterans. We have a couple out in on the East Coast, and he's had a lot of trouble and been treated through the VA all through it. And they found out that he had been diagnosed with a severe condition. They never told him. His wife, who's just a little spitfire, is just batting for him all the time, was raising hell with them over it. So they went to him and said, "You can get the care you need, but we want to guardianize your wife first to shut her up."
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and that's what they wanted to do. So they wanted to put her under a guardianship so they could shut her up. And he absolutely said no. You know, he wasn't going to do that. And I don't know, I haven't talked to them recently, how that ever came out. But it's just, and we've got Sean Higgins down there in Tennessee. Sean has outed, well, he's not in Tennessee now, he's moved to Florida. But at the Memphis VA, he is, and he's gotten this on the news, mainstream news, about all the problems with that VA, where, you know, just outright corruption and lack of care, just lack of normal, what do I want to say, what you would normally do in that setting, as far as, like, maybe, you know, treating, one of the things he pointed out was that at one time on the floor for paraplegics, that several hours went by and nobody was on that floor. They said, oh, they were at a meeting and left these guys on that floor all by themselves and they can't move. They had other videos of one aide who was feeding a paraplegic supposedly his lunch, and she was taking a bite and then giving him a bite and then she ate his dessert. just
yeah, I laugh at that, but I shouldn't.
Yeah, but this crazy, insane stuff, and yet nothing happens.
Yeah, well, once again, you're just left with the bad employees when you get the top boss who wants to do nothing except cover up so that he can look like he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
End up getting rid of all the good employees, and you're just left with the ones that will cover up for the boss.
Well, and then one of the things, this was the first time I, excuse me, that I realized this was also a part of the process. As he exposed all of this, instead of the other employees backing him up, they joined forces with management, and they filed bogus reports on him. He told one girl her hair smelled good, and she filed a sexual assault claim against him.
That's exactly what they do. Like I said, that's exactly what they do. The people who are loyal to the director will lie for him, will build a case. That's a standard, you know, whistleblower retaliation if you're a VA employee. is other employees will lie and get you in trouble and hopefully get you fired.
Yes. And then we look at the doctors even and other administrative personnel who have filed whistleblower complaints or other complaints about how things are operating, and they will put them in a room. They go to work every day, but they're in basically what amounts to a closet.
Yeah, I heard about somebody that exact same thing. Maybe we heard the same story, but yeah, there's a guy in a closet for 2 years and finally he ended up quitting.
Yeah, and no computer, no windows, no nothing, and has to sit there all day. And some of these people were doctors who couldn't treat patients, couldn't do anything because they had objected to one thing or another. And here we're paying these people to be shoved in these closets. This is well known. Nothing happens. It doesn't change. They keep doing it.
Right, because the directors are tyrants. Nobody holds them accountable. Nobody. They're like commanding officers of submarines, or you know, any commanding officer. You know, they're like the commanding officer. They're the guys in charge. But commanding officers have somebody else to report to. These guys don't. They're in complete control, and they got no one to report to.
And even if they did, who's going to do anything?
Well, the VA secretary could. You know, if you had a VA secretary in there that had courage and integrity, you know, he'd start cleaning up the VA. I really believe it just takes one person to clean up the VA. You get the guy at the top that, you know, will hold his directors accountable, and if they don't do the right thing, he can fire them. You need to fire about half these guys, and the VA would get better instantly.
Well, what we found, too, and through Sean's reporting, was when they got rid of one director, they didn't fire them. They just moved them to another facility.
Yeah, they do that. Yep. Just like you're talking about the hamster cage or whatever, where they just move papers around. When it gets to a new desk, a clock starts again.
Yep.
Same thing.
Yep.
Yeah, they just move them around.
Yeah. We've got some time left here, Russell. What did you want to add to this story about your current dilemma?
Oh, I have so much more to add. We're not even
Go ahead.
Big crime.
Go on. Go ahead.
So I felt like I had to leave America because nobody was going to listen to me. And if I continued to make noise, then only worse things would happen because the retaliation had gotten up to, you know, death threats and, you know, threats to put in prison. So I left America and I posted a video on YouTube this back in July exposing the VA police and the director. You know, basically what I've told you so far, I put into a video. And I mailed letters to 50 of the neighbors of the director and 50 of the neighbors of the VA police detective, inviting them to watch the video. So at this point, what I figured is I can't get them held accountable. The best I can do is shame them, and that was my goal. That's what I'm out here trying to do, is to shame them. So their neighbors will know that they're corrupt, their families will know, their friends will know. That's my goal.
Okay.
So I posted a video, and I sent letters to a bunch of their neighbors, and this was in July. A week after I posted the video, a VA police lieutenant shows up at my girlfriend's home.
Oh.
Yeah. He's there to do a wellness check on me.
Oh, well, those you have to be careful of.
Oh, yeah. Wellness checks are just another tool. This tool allows VA police to go, you know, off site and harass veterans instead of just wait for the veterans to come to them. They get to go to the veterans to harass them. And that's what he was there for, obviously.
Right.
He wasn't there to, you know, make sure I'm doing okay. A week after I post a video exposing VA police, you know, he shows up. His goal is, if I was there, and I wasn't, I was in Europe, his goal would be to beat me up, to claim that I threw the first punch, to charge me with a crime, and to throw me in prison.
Right, right. And anytime those people show up for a wellness check, whether it's in the civilian world or military, it's a flag that things are about to go really bad. And you're right. That is exactly why they showed up at your door. I can't. Oof. Was your girlfriend at home?
Still on that, too. I mean, what justification, what authority do they have? I stopped receiving medical care from the VA 15 months earlier, and they go to a friend's home looking for me. So if VA police can show up at a friend's home 15 months after I stopped getting medical care from the VA, that means they can go to anybody's home anytime they want in the country.
Yeah, yes, yes. Was she at home when they got there?
No, she was also in Europe.
Okay. All right. How did you find out they were there?
He went and asked her neighbors, you know, shows his badge, of course, and starts asking questions. And he went down and asked the building manager if she knew where we were. And then he asked her, the last question he asked her was, do you think he might have gone to visit his mother in Florida?
Oh.
Yeah. So they know my mom lives in Florida. I used to live in Florida. And, you know, do you think he might have gone to Florida? Because, of course, they, you know, they want to find me badly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he just flashed his badge and went and asked about 10 of her neighbors where I was.
Did they go to your mother's home?
No.
Okay.
No, they're staying away from my mother so far.
Oh, wow. Oh, jiminy Christmas.
So it gets better. You ready?
Okay. I'm ready. Go ahead.
So a week after I post the video, they come looking for my girlfriend's home. They can't find me. 5 days later, a shipmate of mine, and he's a very good, this guy served America for 30 years.
Uh-huh.
He was an enlisted guy. He was a chief of the boat. He was a master chief petty officer. He was, you know, he was a hero on our boat.
Uh-huh.
And so 5 days after they couldn't find me, he's a victim of a cyber crime. His computer was hacked.
Oh.
And his computer, his Facebook account spoofed messages to some of his Facebook friends, and I was one of them. Okay, and spoofing is, you know, it looks like it came from my friend, my shipmate.
Yes.
Well, I get a message. It looks like it comes from my shipmate. And I'm going to paraphrase it. I can tell you, if you want to off the air, I'll answer any question you have.
Sure.
But paraphrase, what his message said was, oh, my God, is that you in this sex tape? I recorded a video, but the video wouldn't play.
Ah.
So they hacked my friend's computer to make it look like he sent a message to me, saying, oh, my God, is that you in this sex tape? Well, based on the narrative, the exact words in the narrative, and a few other things, the timing, you know, 5 days after they couldn't find me, I figure, okay, they have a sex tape of me. And they're trying to extort me into silence. So basically that crime was, it's a cyber crime, hacking my shipmate's computer, spoofing a message to me to let me know they have a sex tape, and they're trying to extort me with it. Yeah, it gets worse and worse because they really want to shut me up bad now because they keep doing, you know, the crimes are escalating, right? The crimes just keep getting worse and worse, and I keep trying to expose them for those crimes. So they do worse and worse crimes to try to cover up for their previous crimes.
Wow.
So now they've gotten all the way to cyber crimes and extortion.
This doesn't even make sense to me why they would go to these links. Wouldn't it be easier, Russ, on everybody if you just did the right thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You, instead of going through all of this, I mean, look, there again, look at the expense of doing this, traveling, going to these homes, going to other people's houses. If you just did the right thing, you could avoid all that and the ensuing problems.
Yeah, you and I, we don't think like corrupt people. You know, we don't know the criminal mind, and I don't know why these people do these things. I can't understand it. But you know, that's just the way they're, you know, wired, and that's what they also learn. It's, I guess, nature and nurture. Once you get into the VA, if you're not corrupt already, you know, you'll be corrupt sooner or later.
Well, you know, we see that in everything. I'll go back again to talking about the militarization of the police. We've seen them go from, you know, heroes of our communities to where they are despised and feared. You cannot give somebody power like that over someone else. Human nature, they're going to abuse it. They're going to abuse it. You cannot give them that kind of power. And basically what the people you're talking about have been given the okay by the administration that it's okay to act this way, do whatever you need to do. And they, of course, will move immediately to doing really, really offensive things. And when they don't get punished for that, it gets worse the next time.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. That's why, you know, they say the cover-up is worse than the crime.
Yes.
And, you know, the reason for that is, you know, let's say the director covers up like he did in this case. He covered up for kids' cover-up of the harassment. So the cop knows that he can harass anybody he wants, anytime he wants, and he'll get away with it. And the VA police detective, like Kid, knows that he can commit crimes to cover up that, you know, crime, because he'll get away with it, and his director will commit crimes to cover up for him. It goes all the way up the chain. You know, so everybody who works for the director at that hospital knows that they can do anything they want, including commit crimes, and it'll get covered up. So that's why it escalates like you're talking about. They know they can get away with stuff, and they just keep doing more and more because it's fun.
And it's that power over other people that is held unaccountable. We see this all the time with our local law enforcement. They call them, they're not peace officers anymore, law enforcement, where they're gunning people down, executing them, and they don't find them guilty.
Yeah, I know. I'm amazed. I've joined groups on Facebook since this happened. I've joined some, you know, We Hate the VA groups and some, you know, We Hate Cop groups, you know, police to police and that kind of thing. And the videos that are posted on YouTube, you know, I'm just absolutely shocked. And these people, it's clearly murder, and these people aren't even getting, you know, charged. Yep. They get a days off administrative leave, and they get investigated, and they're back at work.
Yep.
And there's an actual video that shows that they murdered somebody.
Yes, there's many of those, where it's an outright execution. And they stage it, and like they'll be slamming somebody to the ground and beating the hell out of them, and then talk about stop resisting, and the person's unconscious. They're not doing anything.
As long as they say stop resisting, they think that, you know, that flies. They just put it in their report. They were resisting. Yep. I told them to stop. I've seen videos of them, you know, slamming women, pregnant women.
Yes.
I just saw one today. A cop just comes up behind her and tackles her.
Yeah. Yep. And they get away with it. And then the Supreme Court, you know, came out with that thing that even if you're in custody, they have only a minimal responsibility to keep you safe. Out in the public, they have no obligation whatsoever to protect you. But you can see that in their mentality that, you know, if anything, they're going to be the attacker, the aggressor. But you see the same thing here with the VA. They might not be drawing guns right now and shooting you, mostly because I don't think they've had the opportunity. But they're the same thing. They're not being held responsible for anything they do. And when you allow somebody to operate in that way, the very worst in their nature is going to come out. And the thing is, you know, they depend on these people and they encourage them, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be doing it.
Yep.
You know, they would not be doing it. So what happened after this? You're in Europe. Then what happened?
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Europe. They go to my girlfriend's house. I'm not there. They commit cyber crimes against my friend to let me know they've got a sex tape on me. So I make another video and just expose them for that. I did what I call the Jeff Bezos approach. You know, I said, yep, okay, you got a sex tape on me. Go ahead and put it out, and that'll prove you have a sex tape on me. That'll prove that you hacked my shit-based computer, and that'll prove you're trying to extort me. So go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't hear anything. You know, they didn't do anything after that, as far as I know.
Yeah.
So it was back in August. So in July, you know, I posted the video, and in August, did all this stuff, and I posted another video exposing them for that. And I didn't hear anything from anybody for a long time. And the next thing I hear is just in January, just a few months ago, I got a letter from the director.
Wow.
And when I posted that second video in August, I haven't had any contact with any VA employee, no one.
Wow.
So August to January, which is 5 months, no contact with any VA employee. The director writes me a letter, tells me, and I got the letter here. Let me just read a couple of them, a couple of sentences here. He says, your veteran status does not entitle you to violate VA rules and regulations. Violations of VA regulations regarding behavior and conduct on VA property will not be tolerated and will be dealt with appropriately. Goes on to say, you have been involved in incidents where you have used verbal, written, and social media platforms which could be construed as being threatening and causing physical harm. I haven't had any contact with any VA employee in 5 months. And this guy's writing me a letter telling me I'm threatening people again. So he claimed I threatened the patient advocate, you know, 3 years ago now, because that was January of 2017. And now he's writing me a letter out of the blue after 5 months of, you know, nothing, that I'm threatening people again. And he tells me he's putting me into a monitoring program. And let me just read it here again. Continued violations of the standards set forth by this facility will warrant further action. So he tells me I'm threatening people. He puts me in a monitoring program. And he tells me if I keep, you know, my behavior going, he's going to take further action.
Yeah, they're setting you up.
Oh, yeah, just like Ed was setting me up with that email telling me to stop texting the patient advocate and calling her at home. So he set me up telling me, you know, writing a letter saying I'm doing stuff I've never done. And this letter wasn't really out of the blue. This letter was retaliation.
Yeah.
Because in August, I posted the video. I didn't do anything until December. In December, I made a post on Facebook. Basically, the post said, I'm going to make another video about police corruption in Long Beach. And does anybody have any stories they'd like to tell? So I did that December 30th. This letter was sent January 15th. So 2 weeks later, he writes me this letter. And this letter is retaliation. for me, making that post on Facebook and saying I'm going to make another video.
Yeah. Yeah, they're setting up a paper trail so that when they do decide to move on you, they're going to produce all of this and say, see, here, we contacted him about this. And the thing is, Russ, they won't be asked for any evidence to substantiate why they initiated the letters.
Exactly. Just like with the patient advocate, you know, I sent emails to the patient advocate, to Detective Kidd, and to the chief of police. I don't think I mentioned. I sent emails to all three of them basically asking, what date and time does the patient advocate say that I threatened her, and what words did she say that I spoke? And all those emails were ignored because, like you said, they don't need details. They don't need to actually, you know, have anything, any basis. They just say he threatened her, and that's enough for them.
Yes.
We same thing with this letter. It says I'm threatening people. I don't know who he claims I'm threatened, when he claims I threatened them. You know, I have no idea. Just he says I'm threatening people, and, you know, I better take care of that.
Well, the thing is, if the letter was legitimate and was based on a legitimate cause for complaint against you, it would include whatever you posted or a synopsis of what you said, who you said it to, and what time and where at. But the fact that it's absent of those things is just, again, another one of those flags. This is phony as hell.
Yeah.
And it's just setting up that paper trail, and they'll make you look like you're guilty without ever producing any evidence that you ever said or did any of those things. And I think that when you talked about class of citizens, you're absolutely right. You know, if you brought charges against them, you'd have to come armed with a U-Haul full of documentation.
Yes.
And it still wouldn't be enough to find them at fault. But they can levy all these charges and support it with these emails they sent out for no apparent reason other than to establish the paper trail, and it looks, they treat it like it fell from the mouth of God. You know, it's unquestionable, and I really resent that in all of this stuff that goes on with government and these agencies and everything else, that these people are allowed to just say and do whatever they want, and there is no... there's no real due process. There's no supporting documentation or evidence. They said it, and that's all there is to it. So.
Yep. We keep coming back to the same thing. Yep, you're exactly right. No accountability, nobody looking over the shoulder.
Yep.
They can do anything they want, and like you said, they can just make general statements and treat them like they're, you know, facts.
Evidence, yeah. And the only evidence is you've fabricated a letter, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something else about the letter.
Okay.
So, yeah, he wrote the letter telling me I'm threatening people and he's going to take corrective action. He puts me in a monitoring program. The monitoring program is for 2 years, if I go on VA property, the first thing I have to do is go to VA police and let them know I'm there.
Oh.
So how absurd is that? I'm never going on property.
Yeah, I bet you're running right over there.
Okay, and it's also Galt, here I am.
Yeah. Yep.
So the letter, like I said, I got it in January. It is dated December 23rd. It was postmarked January 15th.
Uh-huh.
And the reason he did that was I have 30 days to appeal, you know, what he says in the letter.
Yep.
From the date on the letter. So he wrote the letter January 15th. He backdated it to December 23rd. So instead of 30 days to appeal, I only got 7 days to appeal. He lied on the date of the letter.
Wow.
The guy's just a flat-out liar. I mean, the guy has done nothing. He wrote three letters. He wrote one to Congress full of lies. He wrote one to me threatening to charge me with a crime that was full of lies. And then he writes this letter, again, full of lies.
Too many Christmas. I don't know. Yeah. What are you going to do from here, Russ?
Well, I made another video and posted it today.
Okay.
And the title of the video is The Tyrant Down the Street, VA Director Walt Dannenberg. And I mailed letters so far. I mailed letters to 20 of his neighbors, just like I mailed letters to 50 of his neighbors the first video. I plan on mailing letters to 20 of his neighbors every week for the next 8 weeks.
Mm.
My goal is to shame him. I don't know if people who don't have integrity can be shamed. You know, you need to know the difference between right and wrong to be shamed. But I'm going to shame him as much as I can.
Wow. Can you get in trouble for that?
I don't see why.
Yeah.
I'm not threatening anyone. The video's out there for everyone to see. And all I'm doing is exposing this guy.
Okay.
YouTube doesn't take the video down because, you know, it's free speech. It's my First Amendment right to make that video.
Right.
It's my First Amendment right to write letters to people.
Right.
Harassing anyone. I'm telling the truth.
Okay. YouTube took your first video down?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm saying YouTube, it's my First Amendment right to do these things. Of course, you know, I got no rights really. So eventually, you know, maybe they'll find a way to, you know, shut me up with the videos. And then I'll just find some other way to do it because I'm never going to stop.
Well, and a lot of people are taking that same attitude and bypassing social media. There's other ways to get stuff out there. Do you know of other veterans? Have you been in contact with any other veterans that have been adversely affected by this administration, the VA administration?
Well, on Facebook, I've got a handful of Facebook friends who have, you know, been through hell and are still going through hell. There's probably five or six different groups I'm a member of now. My favorite one is VA Lies to Infinity. There's more words in there, but there's like 24,000 members, and most of them have been screwed over by the VA, and we're just sharing our stories.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to have to take a close look at that. I think we need to do more on this. You know, I try to do at least one VA show a month, but I think maybe we need to step this up. And this disgusts me so bad, Russ, that this is allowed to happen. And like I say, our government knows exactly what's going on. And then when you see all of this coming out from this current administration, even the past one, you know, going after whistleblowers, and apparently it's okay for them to act in this manner, but it's just wrong if you report it. And, you know, that's what seems to come out. Trump here recently, when they tried to impeach him, that was such a phony setup deal. He was demanding that the name of the whistleblower be released. And this is targeting. It's targeting.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do. And that's what Trump was trying to do, too. And it's not harassment, but it's, you know, it's trying to get them to shut up. It's trying to make them afraid. I guess it's intimidation.
Yes, intimidation. Yes. And when all the whistleblowers laws say that their identity must be protected, and then you see like the VA and the FDA and Forestry Service and all them setting up these whistleblower hotlines, you know, tip lines. And I've told people don't get on those things because what they're going to use it for is to identify you and target you.
You are exactly right. There's a an investigative reporter named Mike Volpe. I don't know if you've heard of him, V-O-P-E.
Yes.
He wrote an article fairly recently about the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act of 2017.
Uh-huh.
It created the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. Mm-hmm. That office actually is, like you said, it's where whistleblowers call in, send their information, and they think that they're going to get help. They think that, you know, they're going to get some resolution. What the office actually does is it's a hit list.
Yes.
They take information from the whistleblowers, and just like the VA secretary did with my letter, they funnel it back to the director so he can retaliate.
Yes.
The entire purpose of that law is to set up another group to help retaliate against veterans and employees who blow the whistle.
Yes, and I've tried to tell people this. Do not use those tip lines. You're basically giving them the information for them to target you, harass you, terrorize you. One of the things I've noticed in all of this, Russ, is once one of these agencies sets out on you, they never quit coming. Long after you're gone, they're still chasing you. They're still trying to harm you. There is no expense spared. They will try to ruin your name, your reputation, your career, your finances, your relationships. It's like they will not stop.
That's why I can never go back to America.
Yeah.
Because at the point I'm at now, if I go back, you know, they're going to do like you said. They're going to hunt me down and teach me a lesson.
Yes. Yes. So you need to stay where you are. And don't tell me where you are because I do not want to know.
I don't want to know.
But
doesn't even know where I am. She just knows I'm in Europe.
Yeah. Well, that's probably the best way to keep it. But, I keep telling people the answer to these problems, these issues with these agencies, is we've got to organize outside of them. And I think the Whistleblower Summit does a good job of doing that. I was really amazed when I went there, Russ, because here were all these people from all these different perspectives, you know, agencies and problems that were occurring, and the opportunity for networking, because one of the things they try to do to you is to isolate you and make you think that you're the only one that's complaining,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there's nobody else out there. Nobody else is reporting what you are. And that isolation, that sense of isolation, well, you're the only one. How come if this is going on, we haven't heard it from other people? They hear it from tons more people than you even know about.
Yeah, they always want to claim that it's an isolated case, and, you know,
yes.
that's it. It's not a big problem. It's just an isolated case, and we took care of it, is what they
yes.
tell.
Yes, yes.
They get caught and say, hey, it was just this one person in this one place, and we fixed him with training.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, and then they have these phony hearing sessions that's basically just for public show, because it, no matter how strong the representatives or senators come out speaking in that hearing while they're on camera, the follow-up is virtually non-existent, and they don't do anything. It's all to appease the public so that you think they are actually looking into this and going to do something about it, and yet you find out later on they have done absolutely nothing, intend to do nothing about it, and the problem has grown larger. And like I say, this is costing us all money for them to do this to our veterans. It's costing us. We are paying them to harass and terrorize veterans who complain.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation.
Yes, it is.
The taxpayers lose, veterans lose. The only people winning out of this are the top folks at the VA that
yes.
have stock in the right companies, and, you know, they
yes.
advance their careers. That's all that, you know, the
yeah.
VA employees corrupt are the only ones that win.
Yeah, I think it is one of the most disgraceful things. That, and like I say, mostly, I think this is worse than anything personally, because these are our veterans. These are the people who went to war, who laid down everything for the rest of us, and we're allowing them to be treated this way. And I truly, Russ, I cannot figure out what the purpose of this is. What could be the purpose of allowing an agency to be this dysfunctional and such a threat to veterans? What is the purpose?
Well, I've got one kind of an idea, that not really the purpose, but one reason that some people don't care is most of the veterans that get their care from the VA are low income.
Okay. They,
back when I was working, you know, for the Department of Energy and for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, I had health care from other places. I had private health care, private medical insurance. And I never even thought about going to the VA for health care until, you know, I lost my job and ended up going on disability. So it's low-income people, you know, and nobody really cares. We don't have any power. The less money you have, the less power you have. So fewer people care about the veterans getting their treatment from the VA than veterans who are doing well out in the general community.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're the ones that are most vulnerable because we're low-income. Quite a few of them are disabled. So, you know, they're people that don't matter to a lot of people. We just don't matter.
Yes. I agree. And, you know, and seeing the, you know, this reminds me of back in the 60s, early 70s. My husband at that time was a Marine, and he had been wounded in Vietnam. And when we finally left Pendleton heading home, and here he's in his uniform, got a big bandage on his head, you know, bandages other places where he was severely wounded. We were coming through the Denver airport. We had to switch planes there. And this one woman had the nerve to spit on my husband and call him a baby killer.
Oh, my gosh.
To which I promptly blacked her eye for her. And you know, what I'm saying is we saw this angst towards the military back then, but I haven't seen it again till here about the last 5 years. And I've seen the attitude of the public shift dramatically. Full support for our vets to this waffling, well, they knew what they were signing up for. Well, why should they get free medical care? Well, they put their life out there. I think that should be worth something. I don't think medical care is too much to ask. And most of the medical care they receive is from injury while in the military. And I mean, to me, this is no different than if you went to work for a private corporation, which you are when you go to work for the Pentagon, DOD. But you go to work for a private corporation, you get injured on the job. They have to take care of you. Why would it be any different for our military? Why should they have to wait 5, 8, 10 hours to see a doctor? You've got, what, $40 billion to operate on, and you can't have a doctor there for these men and women? What's wrong with this picture? But I don't hold with this thing of, you know what I'm saying? Well, they need to pay their own health care. No, they don't. No,
yeah,
they don't.
It's low-cost health care. It's not free. For some people, it is.
Yes.
For me, it was low-cost. I still had to pay a copay for doctors.
Yes.
I don't have insurance premium, but I still have to pay for doctor's visits and, you know, prescriptions and things like that.
Well, it's like people, Russ, that think Social Security and Medicare, that Medicare is free. No, it is not.
Oh, no.
The lowest premium you're going to pay is $333 a month, but it can shoot up as high as $1,200, $1,400 a month. Then you got all these copays at the clinic or the doctor and the stuff that they don't cover, which, you know, if you're in the hospital, can be massive. The copays on medications and everything, none of this is free.
Oh, I know. I know that you know, the health care expense, the cost of health care in America is, you know, out of the 167 countries in the world, it's number one, most expensive health care in the world. And it's more than twice as expensive as the average health care in Europe.
Yes. And not only that, we rank, I think, number 30 out of the 32 leading countries. We rank 30 in health care, the quality of health care.
And our life expectancy has gone down in the last 6 years while other countries are going up.
Yes. Russ, we're down to the last couple minutes here. I'm going to get you scheduled again. We'll talk tomorrow and get you scheduled again to do the second part of this show. And I'm probably going to want to have you on several other times about various things. And if anything comes up, you let me know because we'll get you on air.
Okay. And, let me say one more thing real quick.
Sure.
I talked about the extortion, the computer hacking and the extortion as far as the sex tape. Well, I know that sex tape exists. And the reason I know is because I got information from a VA employee.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I know, I'm not, you know, guessing. I don't think I'm not, you know, I know because a VA employee told me that VA police have a sex tape of me, which means they did commit cyber crimes and they are trying to extort me.
Yes.
And I have somebody that I can go to, I know his name, that will back me up.
Yeah. Okay. And that just burns me. Anyway, Russ, I want to thank you for coming on. This has been a great interview and I think it'd be explosive in and of itself. And I say, everybody, we will be following up with Russ and doing another episode on this. And I'll get that scheduled in as soon as I can here. I have to check my calendar. And but for everybody that tuned in, thank you. I truly appreciate it. I know Russ does. And again, it was Russell Gault, G-A-U-L-T. You can find him on Facebook. I suggest you do that and catch up on everything that's going on. In the meantime, let me remind everyone again, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, hopefully taking place this year, July 28th through the 31st. But the way things are looking, we're going to be under martial law all over a cold virus. Yay! Anyway, Russ, thank you for being my guest this evening. I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. All right. Everybody, thank you so much. And we will be back. Good night, everyone.